From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Medicare's new drug benefit went into effect this week. For those who did the research and enrolled, the plan will probably save them money. But for many seniors who missed the first deadline, the start of the new program has led to both medical and financial insecurity. Today, we're taking a look at the practical side of the Medicare drug benefit, what it means for seniors and others who are eligible in North Carolina, and also talking about how the complex new program came into being. And we're joined in the studio by Gina Upchurch, who counsels Medicare recipients and is executive director of the Pharmaceutical Care Clinic, Senior Pharm Assist. Gina, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Also, we're joined by Kevin Schulman, who is director of the Health Sector Management Program at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business. Kevin, welcome.
Thanks, Frank.
Taking your phone calls as well at 877-962-9862. If you're a Medicare participant or a relative, how did this week go for you? Were you able to navigate the paperwork and get the drugs that you needed? If not, give us a call. If you did and things went smoothly, love to hear from you as well. 877-962-9862. Do you expect to save money? You can call us and talk about that. Well, Gina Upchurch, you have been counseling folks for a while now since this program was announced. How did your week go?
My week has been very interesting. It's there's a staff at Senior Pharmacist that's been even busier than I've been. You're right, there are a lot of people that did not sign up that are a little bit panicked that January 1's come, but they have till May 15th, so we say, calm down.
So they can. But what kind of questions are you getting now, especially in this first week? Have people come back to you and said, look, I did everything you said and it's not working?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, a lot of folks that signed up for plans usually towards the latter part of December have not received information from the drug plans themselves that give information that they can take to the pharmacy to get their prescription filled. So we've been on the phone a lot with pharmacists, a lot with CMS, Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, as well as the plans, trying to figure out, do you have Ms. Jones' information? Mm. What is her information to get her prescription filled? And quite frankly, we can't get a lot of that information at this point unless the person receives
it. So it seems to be the two really big aspects of this, obviously eligibility, signing up, getting your card, am I in the system, part one. Part two, once I'm in, how do I choose? I've got 38 here in North Carolina alone to choose from.
Absolutely, and it really matters what you choose, quite frankly. This morning helped probably about seven people pick plans, and what you have to do, quite frankly, is go into a website or have someone go in for you that Medicare created and type in the medicines, the doses, and it will give you the plans from least expensive to most expensive.
Kevin, we have been at this or thinking about this for 2 years. The legislation passed 2 years ago. Was that enough time to prepare for the need here?
Well, by law, we were going to have this benefit, and this benefit was going to be in place January 1st. So we do have the benefit, and it is there. What the government's done is actually create a whole new entity that never existed before, which is an at-risk drug plan for seniors. We had to understand how to create that infrastructure. There had to be a competitive bidding process that actually Medicare had to create to put this in place and get all of that done within 2 years, which was a phenomenal effort on their part. This is not a simple evolution of plans that existed previously, even though the companies might be the same.
And it's a whole new plan. Describe it for us just briefly what we're dealing with now. We have private insurance companies that are actually that the seniors will work through to get their drugs and their prescriptions.
When the Medicare drug benefit, Medicare before of this actually didn't have a drug benefit. There were a very limited number of medications that were available through Medicare. Some cancer drugs, some transplant drugs. Other than that, seniors actually had to rely on their employers for medications, could rely on state Medicaid programs, or had to pay either for private insurance or pay out of pocket for their prescriptions. What we have now is the government has contracted with private plans, either on a national basis or on a regional basis here in North Carolina, and then the plans could offer a variety of different packages. And that's part of the confusion was the plans and the companies who provided them had no idea how to put together a package of benefits for seniors that would be the most attractive since this never existed before.
So, Gina Upchurch, when people came to you and asked for advice, I mean, what do you tell them?
Well, right now we try to find out if they have any other coverage, and if that coverage is what Medicare is calling is creditable, meaning it's as good as the basic Medicare benefit, and that if it is, then we, they're likely just to stay with that plan. If they don't have any coverage, then we're helping them pick plans, quite frankly. But I want to add to Kevin's list. While most seniors that had a prescription benefit were getting it through their past employer, a lot of people in North Carolina relied on two other things other than the list that he had, and that is, one, the drug manufacturer's patient assistance programs for people that have limited incomes that give free or very reduced rate product. And we had a great statewide prescription program for seniors up to 250% of the poverty level called North Carolina Senior Care. And January 1, the senior care program ceased, and the drug manufacturers programs for seniors with limited incomes, because you're eligible for Medicare or have picked a Medicare drug plan, you become ineligible for the assistance through those plans. So we're very concerned about some people who cannot afford to participate in this benefit without some help.
And have you found, I mean, the presumption is, of course, that your prescription bills are going to go down. The government's going to help you pay for some of this. But that may not be the case for everybody, as you suggest. Have you found that there are folks who are saying, hey, wait a minute, I'm worse off today than I was before?
Absolutely. Because some of them, particularly those that take very few medications, have to pay a monthly premium into the system. The cheapest monthly premium in North Carolina is $13.27. But we describe it as insurance, though. You are paying for the future if you go on other medications. So we do think it's worth it for most people, but I do think it'll be a financial struggle for some people to even participate.
And what if you can't afford the premiums, Kevin?
Well, if you're at 150% of the federal poverty level or below, there are subsidies that are available through the program. There are subsidies to help support the premium that you'd have to pay, and there's also subsidies that make the benefit package slightly more generous than the average. So you hopefully are better off than you were before the drug benefit came into place.
Take us back a little bit and talk about the evolution of this plan politically. Clearly, there was a rise in drug prices, seniors saying, hey, we can't afford this. There was bipartisan agreement that something had to be done, but that's where the agreement ended, wasn't it? And now Republicans and Democrats had two very different ideas about how to solve the problem.
Yeah, so in the passage of this legislation, this is the largest change in Medicare in 40 years. The original Medicare program didn't have a drug benefit because in the 1960s, actually most insurance plans didn't have a drug benefit, and Medicare was supposed to look exactly like Blue Cross Blue Shield plans looked in the 1960s. In the late 1980s, we tried to pass a drug benefit as a nation. It had a very substantial premium. It was mandatory, and seniors balked, and in fact, the bill was rescinded before it ever went into play. So actually, a lot of people in Washington were very leery of a drug benefit. After President Clinton's health care plans failed, there was another push at the end of the Clinton administration to enact a drug benefit in Medicare. And the president had a plan. His plan was actually still going to use these private pharmacy benefit managers, but was going to have one per market, one plan per market, not multiple plans. They modified that slightly at the end of the administration to have two plans. That rolled forward into the current administration, and the president really in 2003, looking forward to the next presidential election, needed to have a domestic platform. And the pressure for that to get this idea of a drug benefit off the table pushed a really interesting conglomeration of conservative Republicans and liberal Democrats to bring a Medicare bill to passage. And the bill itself squeaked by. You may not remember this, but the passage of the bill in the House actually required the House to extend the vote in an unprecedented fashion to get an arms twisted to get enough votes to pass.
And why? What's the theory behind having this taken care of through private providers and not through the government like the rest of the Medicare program?
There was a very strong push on the part of pharmaceutical manufacturers to not have been direct negotiations with the federal government over the prices that were being offered. And that was one of the factors that led to this idea of private plans. Administratively, again, at least the Clinton administration also proposed to use private plans maybe in a different way than the Bush administration has done. But the idea of private plans isn't as much of an issue as the idea of who's setting the price and who's negotiating the price.
So in a sense, the drug companies are saying, we don't want to have to negotiate. We don't want our prices to fall. And they seem to win out in this political struggle. But does that mean, Gina Upchurch, do you think that is, in a sense, testing going into a new frontier with the elderly?
Well, I do think this is a step to somewhat privatize Medicare. As you mentioned before, Medicare Part A and B, which is hospitalization and primarily outpatient physician visits, is administered by Medicare, and this is looking to private companies. And in North Carolina, we have 53 plans to pick from. 38 are standalone Part D drug benefits, and 15 are what we call Medicare Advantage plans that include prescription drugs. So it created choice, but as Kevin said, these companies are the ones that are negotiating the price with the manufacturers and with pharmacies, quite frankly, about what they'll reimburse pharmacy to try to get the prices down versus the government directly negotiating prices.
To be fair, the Medicare actually is administered through private plans. The government your Medicare hospital claims and physician claims are all paid by private insurers. The government actually is not the one writing the check. The major difference here is that there's just one plan for hospital care in North Carolina. There's one plan for physician services.
We're talking about Medicare Part D that went into effect this week. On the State of Things, Gina Upchurch is with us, Executive Director of Senior Pharm Assist, a pharmaceutical care clinic in Durham. Kevin Shulman is Director of the Health Sector Management Program at Duke University, also in the studio. And we're taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862. Have you figured out the new program? Is it better for you than the one that you had before? Give us a call, 877-962-9862, on the State of Things as our program continues. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. If you went to the pharmacy this week, you may have noticed longer lines. It's the first week of Medicare's new drug benefit plan, and in North Carolina and across the nation, it's meant both confusion and delay. We're talking today about the new plan to see how it went in the first week. Gina Upchurch is Executive Director of Senior Pharmacist, and Kevin Shulman is Director of the Health Sector Management Program at Duke. They're in the studio. We're taking your calls as well at 877-962-9862. And joining us now is Mike James. Mike James owns the Person Street Pharmacy in Raleigh, and like many pharmacists in North Carolina, he and his staff have been working long hours this week, I suspect, spending much of their time on the phone with the state's 38 new Medicare insurance companies. Mike James, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
How was your week?
Busy.
Yeah. Now, you had to anticipate, obviously, this is the first week of a brand new program. So clearly, we have a right to expect that it's going to be difficult in that first week. More difficult than you expected?
I think that it was awfully busy, and I think that hopefully we had prepared well enough. I guess all the pharmacies across the state had prepared well enough to be prepared for what was going to hit. And I think everything that we expected did, in fact, happen.
And tell us about some of the biggest problems you encountered.
I think the largest problem that we've had has been maybe twofold. Number one, that we see a lot of patients coming in the pharmacy that even though we've all tried to train the patients and help them understand that this is coming, pretty much did not have their information nor were aware that they had received their information. And then the second difficult thing that we encountered and continue to encounter is that when we're trying to call to get information for those patients, it is almost impossible to get through the appropriate people to receive information on that particular patient.
And who are you calling? Are you calling the providers?
Well, we're calling CMS, we're calling 1-800-MEDICARE, we're calling other numbers that were set up for pharmacies to call to try to recruit information that was needed for the patient. And I think that these programs, the PBMs themselves and even CMS and the federal government, probably have underestimated the amount of information needed and the amount of people making calls. I know that I was told the other day that one company had received 50,000 calls on Monday alone.
Mm. And are these all eligibility questions or questions about whether the drugs they're taking are on your formulary or what are the biggest problems?
No, mainly I'm referring to eligibility.
Yeah, eligibility, yeah.
People that were not aware that they had been changed to another program or did not have the information they needed.
And so what happens at that point? Are you able to fill the prescription, or do you send them away without it until it gets resolved?
No, we don't send them away without their medication. We spend some time trying to recover the information we need. And And in most cases, after a period of time, if everyone is patient enough, we finally wind up with that information and are able to do the, what we need to be doing.
I understand that one of your concerns is about the financial impact on businesses like yours. Tell us about that.
Well, I think that people need to understand that, unfortunately, we're talking about healthcare, obviously, but unfortunately, pharmacies are businesses and obviously have to pay bills and pay their wholesalers and people of that nature. And what I think we're going to see, unfortunately, is somewhere along the way in the next 30 days or so that we're going to start seeing pharmacies have a cash flow problem. Mm. And the reason I believe that is because I do not believe that the PBMs are going to promptly write checks as needed in order to pay for merchandise. Most pharmacies today buy all of their merchandise, the majority of their merchandise, from a wholesaler who requires that the bills be paid twice a month. And if you take 30 or 40 or 50 days to get paid for prescriptions dispensed, in the midst of that time, you're going to have to pay your wholesaler twice, and that creates a tremendous cash flow problem.
Do you think that's just a temporary condition, or is that something that seems to be built into the program?
Well, I hope that it's temporary. We've seen in the past with PBMs that sometimes their delay in paying the normal checks that we expect to get sometime in our mind are calculated. Now, whether there's any truth in that, we don't know. But what we do know is that we see a lot of cases in which checks that should arrive the first of the month don't arrive until the latter third or fourth week of that month. So this is the thing that we're concerned about today, as you alluded to a while ago, is the very fact that if we see a delay in payments of checks, there's a huge amount of revenue that has gone out to pay for these medications by these pharmacies, and the question is whether or not they can actually underwrite this program in a way in which they can continue to exist as a pharmacy.
Now, when we talk about the delays and the confusion, and again, something that we might be able to expect given the newness of this program, do you see ways that this could have been handled differently and things could have gone a little more smoothly?
Well, I think the problem we have here, number one, you referred to a while ago as you and Gina were speaking, I think the concept of when this was passed and when they decided to do it, I think, number one, it was done very hastily. It basically was passed, as you probably know, about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and then it was turned over to CMS to start setting up guidelines. And while there was a lot of time, basically a year plus time to set that up, unfortunately, I don't think that a lot of people were called in to the considerations of the guidelines for this program that were actually in pharmacies or doing day-to-day operations that understood how this clientele works. And when I say this clientele, I'm talking about Medicare recipients. So consequently, in order for them to do this and move along with this program, I think there certainly could have been a lot better effort done to bring people in, such as Gina and other people that have that knowledge that could, in actuality, help them put together a program that would actually work more efficiently.
All right, Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pharmacist Mike James owns the Person Street Pharmacy in Raleigh. Well, Gina, were you and were other organizations consulted by the government when they were putting this thing together?
Unofficially, I was. I mean, they did put the bill was out there, and then they had the guidelines, as Mike mentioned, that CMS came up with, and they asked for feedback. And I did read and comment on it, and then they actually put out a report saying, here are the comments that we received, and this is how we're responding to it. But they had a huge job. I mean, here's this law, and then you have to make it function. And it was a big step. So I think they did get some feedback, but I agree with Mike. I mean, it is a very confusing benefit for healthcare providers, not just seniors and people with disabilities that have Medicare, but for healthcare providers themselves.
We're talking about Medicare and the drug benefit program that went into effect this week. Taking your calls at 877-962-9862. Let's go to the phones. Linda is on the line from Southern Pines. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
My comment is that I think that this whole farce of a plan is nothing but a big windfall for not only the pharmaceuticals but the insurance companies. I think that it's hurting an awful lot of the elderly. And to put it out there so that the way that you research it is on the computer is ridiculous. Most of the elderly have no computer knowledge, but they're being forced to learn how to find out about this plan through the computer because that's where all the information is, unless you want to send away for all the packets and then have to go through all of it like that.
All right, Linda. Well, that's I want to take the first part of your question first and ask Kevin about that, and thank you for your call, and that is whether or not this is really going to be in the best interest of seniors or whether this does amount to a windfall for both the pharmaceutical companies and the providers.
Well, I think overall the goal of legislation sometimes is to preserve the status quo. At the end of the day, in general, the Medicare drug benefit is going to pick up probably around 25% of the costs of drugs for seniors that seniors had to pay out of pocket. So on average, seniors are better off. They're not getting free medications through this. There's a lot of complexity to this. But remember, the taxpayers now are putting up to $1 trillion into a drug benefit that didn't exist before and that seniors really didn't pay for. Even though they're paying a premium now, that doesn't pay for the subsidy that the rest of us are putting to these drugs. So on average, it's not the world's most generous benefit, but there is something being given to people.
Well, I guess the question is, are you getting the biggest bang for your buck when you have to go through providers? They have to make a profit, and insurance and the drug companies, as you say, didn't want to have to negotiate a lower price.
Well, I think this is the first implementation of this. We'll see how effective the plans were at negotiating discounts. We'll see how attractive this is to seniors. We'll see actually the whole plan morph again. If people are confused now, we were talking earlier today, at the end of this year, you're going to have to sign up again next year. The plans are going to change. They really design these programs on the fly to try and see what would be attractive to seniors. And we may find out they made fairly large mistakes.
Gina?
Yeah. My grandfather was a pharmacist in Smithfield, North Carolina. And I remember the days when I was smaller, when someone came to purchase a medication, say you purchased $1 worth of medication, some went to the pharmacy, a lot of it went to the drug manufacturer, and some to a wholesaler. So maybe three hands were in the dollar pie. Now, as Mike mentioned, PBMs, which are pharmacy benefits managers, they're sort of the computerized end of drug medication adjudication over computers. And then you have repackagers that are often in the mix, taking big bottles to smaller bottles, unit dose, that kind of thing. And you have several different wholesalers. So there are many people's hands, now insurance companies, in addition to the PBM. That's who make up prescription drug plans, are really insurance companies working with PBMs, negotiating with drug manufacturers.
Would this be any cheaper? Would any of those, sort of folks in the middle and steps in the middle be eliminated if we had a system where patients were simply reimbursed by a check from the government after they bought their medicine?
Right. That would definitely cut out a couple of
hands. At least the insurance company, but,
right.
But people would still be packaging the medicine. Let's go to the phones, 877-962-9862. Joan is on the line from Raleigh. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm on Social Security Disability and Medicare, and I've been on several prescription drug assistance programs, and at least one of them is now ending, whether you get a Plan D policy or not. So I'm sort of feeling very stuck. I take a lot of medications. It's going to be very expensive. Even with the cheapest plan, my medications change, so I don't know. I don't feel like I have a good way of judging which plan to sign up on, and my Social Security payment is high enough that I'm not 150% of the poverty level, but my medical bills are very high, so I'm just stuck, I guess.
All right. Let's put that question to Gina. Thank you for calling, Joan.
You raise a great point, and I'll just like to reiterate it. The help through the Medicare benefit goes up to 150% of the poverty level. Actually, the really good help just goes up to 135% of the poverty level, and then there's some sliding scale benefits. The drug manufacturer programs went up to at least 200% of the poverty level. Some of them went beyond, and our state prescription drug benefit went up to 250% of the poverty level.
And those are the programs that are now gone.
That are gone,
yeah.
Or for most people, absolutely. But I will tell Joan that it absolutely pays to compare. So if you cannot get on the computer, find someone who can. The Seniors Health Insurance Program across our state, and they're actually something called local outreach coordinators in every county to help people sort through this, because it really does. I was just helping somebody this morning. She spends $2,200 on drugs. We found her plan. She's going to spend about $800 a year. You have to remember, if you find a plan that covers your drugs, $1,500 of the first $2,250 will be subsidized by the government. So it is a benefit to folks, and I would suggest that she do that. One thing she also triggered in me is that this financial assistance is not just based on income. It is also based on an assets test, a cash assets test. And we are finding, and I know the Kaiser Family Foundation has done a study looking at that, and we're very concerned about people who have very limited incomes but say they own two little life insurance policies that are whole life and can be cashed in. That cash-in amount counts as an asset to that person.
Well, what about if you bought a house 50 years ago and it's now quintupled in value and you've paid it off and you couldn't afford to live there anymore?
You absolutely, your home does not count.
Doesn't count.
If you're living in it, yes.
No.
Your home does not count. Cars do not count. But things that are easily cashed in are counted.
Also, the question raised earlier about asking seniors to go to the web, has that been a problem or has it brought families closer together? Because you're asking, you know, folks in the family to help you out and navigate the web.
Well, I think there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of these choices given the number of plans, and actually putting this to paper would be really hard. So, you know, it's not a bad thing that we get people more used to using the Internet, especially looking for health information. Hopefully it's not a bad thing to get families closer together like you're talking about. But I think it is putting a burden. I mean, when you talk to people in middle ages, they're all trying to help their parents navigate this. So there's no question that the burden's being distributed fairly widely.
Let's get back to also the question about the profitability of this. As we said, the pharmaceutical companies were really interested in not having the government be able to negotiate lower prices. But what about the insurance companies themselves? This seems to be new territory for them, offering plans that are prescription only. Do they have enough experience in this to know that they're going to actually make money?
This type of product where the plan's taking risk, at the end of the day, the insurance companies are taking risk for whatever the experience is, whatever drugs that people are using, actually never existed before. So the insurers are a little careful right now. They're not exactly sure that they're going to make money out of this. Medicare has actually gotten fairly generous with them about protecting them against really adverse risk. But there's a chance that they won't make money. There's a chance they'll pull out of the market after this year or substantially change what they offer going forward.
And the other thing is that they are able to change the drugs that they had originally offered mid-year without your being able to change plans. Isn't that right? So if you signed on thinking, oh, they've got my drug, and then they decide to change it and put a generic in or something else.
Yeah, they can do that. I don't think a lot of them will. I think they'll make most of their changes between plan years, which is based on a calendar year. And the reason being, the government said to these plans, if you do that, if you make a drug more difficult to access because of cost or you put it in a different tier, making it more expensive, then you have to let the Medicare beneficiary know within 60 days of doing it. You have to let the prescriber know, and you have to let the pharmacy know. So they created an administrative burden for them doing that during the plan year. So I don't think we're going to have as much of that. But we do often get the question, I don't know what they give me next week. How can I predict the future? And you really have to work with Medicare beneficiaries to be proactive and say to their provider, I am on plan X. Here is the list of the drugs that covers. Please pick from this list. And I understand that Hippocrates, which is a computerized system that a lot of physicians have, will actually have all the formularies or drug lists on their computer. So that will be a good help.
Let's go out to Raleigh, where Sarah is on the line with a question. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I mailed in my original application well back in early November, but they lost it and I had to resend it in after Christmas. My question is the enroll or join date the postmark date or the receive date?
You know, Gina?
I'll try to answer that. It is the day it's the day they process it. So the card will that you eventually get, hopefully, will be the day that company received it and processed it. I would keep, if you did it online and got a confirmation number, you can keep that because it would have been effective January 1st, obviously, if you did it in November. And once you get your plan and get enrolled, you can try to see if you can get reimbursed if you have to purchase anything. That's what we're telling people to do.
Kevin, I want to switch to back to the policy side of this again. Did we miss an opportunity in this particular plan to lower the price of drugs?
Well, again, this is a work in evolution. We're not done. We'll see what happens. Well, there's already been talk on the Congress about trying to cut this back. There's also questions about whether or not this May deadline for enrollment is going to be firm and fixed. There's a subtle underpinning here. If enough seniors don't sign up for this benefit, the cost to Medicare is going to go way up. And
that's because you assume that the healthy folks aren't signing up.
This is a true insurance plan. Healthy people have to sign up. Otherwise, sick people are going to be paying, are going to be getting a huge subsidy, which was never intended. So I think in terms of where we're at and where we're going, fiscal realities are going to hit when we see how expensive this plan really is. And again, the realities of the marketplace are going to shape a lot of what the offerings are next year.
Gina?
John Oberlander, who's with the UNC School of Medicine, has noted before that Medicare Part A and B didn't begin by controlling, what was paid. They actually said whatever's usual and customary. And then over time, when Congress started seeing what Medicare A and B, the government stepped in and said, hold on, if this person's doing this procedure and it's cost $100 and this one costs $500, we're going to say all we're going to pay is $200. So he thinks ultimately it may mean that prices are controlled. But I always remind seniors that, if they have stock portfolio or retirement that have drug company stock, we can't have it both ways. So. Yeah.
Medicare Part D, we're taking a look at week one on today's program with Gina Upchurch, Senior Pharmacist, a group that helps seniors navigate this complex environment. Kevin Schulman is with us from Duke University. Just ahead, more on the plan and more of your calls at 877-962-9862. On the State of Things, stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Seniors and others who are eligible for Medicare's new drug benefit program now have 38 plans to choose from in North Carolina. The new program is complex. It is controversial. It took effect this week, and we're talking about it with Gina Upchurch of Senior Pharm Assist and Kevin Schulman of Duke University. We're taking your calls at 877-962-9862. Should private companies be managing the nation's new drug benefit program? Should it be the government? Should it be a single pay, a single provider? Do you expect the new plan to save you money or cost you more? Give us a call at 877-962-9862. Well, just before the break, Gina, you made the point that if you're making money, if you have a stock portfolio and it includes drug companies and they're making money, you can't have it both ways. But are we putting too much money into the treatment side? Are we encouraging drug companies that really make money when you get sick?
Yeah, and I do think there is some of that. But during the break, Kevin and I were talking. I do think a lot of medicines are about prevention. If you think, if I can control somebody's hypertension or somebody's cholesterol so they don't have the stroke or the heart attack, we're ultimately saving medications. Now, we deal with older adults. Oftentimes, they are over-medicated. That's the word I would use to describe it. So I think we need to balance medication appropriateness with the access to the drugs people need.
Kevin?
Overall, we have choices to make as a society. We want, obviously, it is a matter of public policy to be good stewards of the federal programs like this. At the other extreme, all of us want access to new therapies and new ideas should we get sick. And I don't think we've actually had a discussion about how to balance those two. And I think this is where it's coming to play. It's not just your stock portfolio, but do you want treatment available next year for what ails you or what ails your kids, should they get sick, heaven forbid? And the answer is most of us would say yes. So at the end of the day, there is a balance. We might be in overcompensating right now. There might be too much money to go in some firms and not others, but we need to think about this in the context of the trade-offs that firms are going to make.
Well, you talk about this negotiation trying to reach the balance. Doesn't it become more difficult when you create a system where the incentives are in providing new drugs, and that would seem to mean less money in the whole area of prevention, research, and development? Unless you assume that drugs are the only way to do prevention, but there are other prevention techniques and therapies.
Well, we have other ways to make investments in healthcare. The National Institutes of Health is a huge amount of investment in health research. Prevention's a part of that. The CDC programs, prevention's a part of that. Obesity, we're not making nearly enough investments in trying to figure out how to deal with that. So it's not saying that prevention's not an important part of the mix going forward. And you're right, we need to be doing more there. But that wasn't on the table when we were talking about drug benefits for seniors and the impact of that.
877-962-9862 is the number to call. If you'd like to join our conversation about Medicare Part D today, Steve is on the line. Hi, Steve.
Hello. I just wanted to call in and state that my mother-in-law was actually able to save about $2,500 a year. It took a lot of work on my wife's part to figure the plans out, but she's a breast cancer survivor and takes some fairly expensive medications, and being a Social Security income-only individual, a $2,500 a year savings is a huge amount of money to her.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for the call. Gina, I'm sure you've had cases like that where you've seen people who are actually saving money.
Absolutely, particularly people that were paying for a Medigap supplement or Medicare supplement. HI&J supplements included prescription drugs, but that benefit's not nearly as good as the Part D benefit. So when you can say to someone, wow, you've been paying high premiums for this, and now you can drop the prescription piece, keep the medical coverage, drop the prescription piece, that, you know, it wipes out $250 a month in a premium they were paying, and then you sign up for a Part D plan that's going to be even better coverage at a lot less cost.
Have seniors expressed the fear to you, Gina, that they can take a look at the plan this year because they know what drugs they're taking, but they really don't know what things are going to be like for them next year or in the next 6 months?
That happens every day. And what we say to them is you have to be proactive in your health care. Whatever plan we end up getting you enrolled in or you enroll in, you need to find out what medicines they cover, at what cost, and let your provider know that so they can pick from the list from your plan.
Kevin?
You know, to think about 38 different formularies as a physician just for Medicare and then all the other formularies are out there in the marketplace, none of your physicians are going to know which plan covers which medication. So unless you walk in with a list and really have an idea, you may or may not get a drug that's optimal for you.
That's where we're going to keep community pharmacists still busy, because they're constantly intervening for people trying to get the provider to use something. But there are going to be some handheld systems that are supposed to list all these formularies, but we'll see.
And talk to us, too, in terms of the specifics of this plan, about the so-called donut, that period of time you will not be covered.
So when the Congress, at the end of the day, passed this legislation, not only did they create a new program, but they actually were stuck with a very strict budget cap. If you remember way back when, it was originally $400 billion. And the only way they could do that was to have a period where people actually are going to be paying premiums and have no drug coverage. And so we have a very generous benefit up to $2,250. So that'll help people who actually don't use a lot of prescriptions get into the program. We have a very generous benefit if you use a lot of prescriptions in terms of the catastrophic coverage above $5,100 a year. But between $2,250 and $5,100, there's a unique thing in insurance markets that there's actually, you're going to be paying a premium, and there's the so-called donut hole is basically you're going to be paying the full cost of medication while you're paying the premium.
Until you get to that higher level, yeah.
Yeah, I just would like to add to that. People generally don't get the second sort of caveat. If you take the green pill, and the green pill is not on your covered list of drugs or your formulary, if you pay for the green pill out of your own pocket, it doesn't count towards your deductible, it doesn't count towards your cost share, it doesn't count towards the coverage gap or donut hole. It's as if you aren't paying for it. So it really is important that you pick plans or you try to stay with drugs on your that are on the plan, because it really doesn't count towards any of your cost sharing.
877-962-9862. Give us a call if you want to talk about your experience with the Medicare Drug Assistance Program. Milton's on the line from Durham. Hello, Milton.
Hi.
You have a question for us?
I just have a comment. The cost of drugs is really pretty outrageous in this country. My mother-in-law lives in France, and she pays less for her prescription for Zocor than I pay for Zocor copayment. Now, nobody can convince me that the drug companies are selling Zocor in France and losing money. Somebody is making an awful lot of money on this, and I don't understand why our prices are so high and they're so ordinary in other countries.
Thank you.
I hope one of your people can comment.
Well, I'll start with Kevin.
I'm not sure I can explain it totally. The good news for Zocor in specific is it's going off patent and it'll be available generic this year. The the price of drugs is set in every market. The interesting thing about prescription drugs, because we need to be 100% sure that the drug is the real product and is safe, is there's not parallel trade. So I could, you know, a U.S. pharmaceutical company could sell a drug in France and set a price. If I was selling Clorox in France and it was less expensive than Clorox in the United States, U.S. wholesalers would actually just buy it in France and bring it back over. Prescription drugs, we can't do that. And so when a price is set in a market, that's it for that market. And so the interesting thing right now is because of his mother and other people, we know a lot more about the prices in different markets. A lot of goods have different prices in different markets, but there's no way to actually use that to our advantage unless you go and visit or run up to Canada.
Yeah, Gina?
I think my understanding, and Kevin can just correct it if it's not true, is that we are one of the only developed countries that the government does not set drug prices. And France does, Canada does, and that's why, quite frankly, you get it less expensively in those other countries.
But as Milton suggests, if I didn't like the price you set, I don't have to sell it to you. So clearly you're making money. If you're in Canada and you're selling a drug, I wouldn't sell it to you if I'm losing money. It'd be kind of crazy.
Yeah, we have a quandary in terms of Canada and Western Europe. We're upset when the prices aren't at the same as that we have access to. But we've also asked these same firms to offer much lower prices in other markets. So for HIV drugs for Africa, we've actually beat them up very hard to make them available at no cost. So we're asking the firms to cross-subsidize some of our public policy goals. It's hard to figure out what the right price is and how to create a market mechanism. And to the Republicans' credit somewhat, this idea of private firms negotiating is how we set prices in other parts of the market, rather than, as Tom Scully, was the administrator, said, you know, setting a minister price, sitting in Washington, doing the best you can.
One critique, though, that I've read suggests that while this appears to be a market approach, that the points of competition are all in the wrong place, so it doesn't really work effectively. The way competition should work is I'm the patient, so I want the best possible doctor, I want the best possible drug, and you all are going to compete for my business. That's not the way it's working. You've got drug companies competing, working with the government not to lower the price, and you've got insurance companies that are hoping that I don't get sick. And so competition really doesn't work the way it does when I go to buy a car.
Well, I think we're going to see, one of the unfortunate parts of the entire healthcare benefit structure is that we're going to see more and more out-of-pocket payments as individuals. These plans still have fairly substantial co-payments. We're going to have to become much better educated consumers and start using some of those market mechanisms to work for us.
Let's go to John in Hillsboro with a question or a comment. Hello, John.
Hello. My question is, I think I heard this discussed on public radio some time back.
I love that public radio, don't you, John?
Pardon?
I love that public radio, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Why is it that not arranged so that the drug manufacturers and the healthcare providers, the doctors, the HMOs, and everybody else are in a situation where they are rewarded for keeping us well instead of rewarded for, like, coming up with medications or equipment to cure our problems, such as come up with a prophylactic medication or a something like that, that in the end they pay out less money, so they get a kickback from that.
All right. We talked about this a little before, but let's talk about it in terms of other countries that have put more, poorer countries that have had been forced to put more energy into prevention and are doing not bad.
Well, I think there's two different approaches to this. There's a public health approach and looking at our public health infrastructure. Again, we talked about obesity. There's a lot of non-medical aspects of our health that we're tremendously underinvested in. My pet peeve is bike paths here in North Carolina, and how can you exercise in the suburban environment that we're in? But on the to the caller's question, you know, the idea of managed care, when we had managed care plans as the solution, was that in fact we'd be paying people to make investments in prevention. And at the end of the day, the American public voted against that, basically.
Gina, some states have crafted programs. The states have developed their own programs with a new Medicare plan. And I just wonder what kind of a program you would like to see here in North Carolina.
Oh, thank you for asking. I think we need to take advantage of the Medicare plan and use that subsidy as much as possible. So what we're suggesting is that the state invest at a minimum in helping people up to 200% of the poverty level pay their premium if they otherwise can't afford it, so then that people can at least pull down that $1,500 in subsidy that comes during the first $2,250. But the other thing that we think is important for a statewide program is that people get hands-on help to sort through this. This is not going to end May 15th. Every calendar year, people are going to have to make decisions about these plans. The North Carolina Seniors Health Insurance Program does a great deal, but we really need people in the communities that know how to use the computer systems that can help people. And we already have it going in North Carolina. Through the North Carolina Senior Care Program, the Health and Wellness Trust Fund Commission's funded some sites across our state, and we want them to keep that going.
And how about the other part of that, the increased subsidy? Any movement on that in this state?
I definitely know the governor's office, lieutenant governor's office, have seen it. They've looked at it. I think they're waiting for more information, so hopefully they'll get it soon.
And best advice, to kind of takeaway advice for seniors or their families who are still grappling with this?
It pays to compare. I would not ignore it. You need to get involved. You need to get some help to figure out if this is beneficial for you.
Let's go to Don, who's on the line in Southern Pines. Hello, Don.
Hey, I'm a practicing physician in Southern Pines, and I need to get two questions answered first. What is the website you folks are using to get seniors on, other than Medicare.gov? Do you have one specifically for North Carolina?
No, it is the Medicare.gov, and then you put in the person's zip code, and it'll do it just for your area when you put the zip code in.
Second thing is, what are the limits on the means testing? I didn't understand that before.
Okay. For any sort of financial subsidy, a person's income needs to be less than $14,355 a year, any sort of subsidy. $14,355, for a couple it's $19,245. To receive any help also, again, is the assets test, and that is $11,500 for a single person and $23,000 for a couple in assets. And that is liquid assets. That's savings, CDs, a life insurance policy that's whole life that can be cashed in. It would be the cash-in value.
All right, Don, thank you for your call. It does leave one question I have, and we haven't really talked about physicians. Does this program in any way have an impact on physicians?
It has a huge impact on physicians because patients are going to sign up for a plan and then find out that their drug is not one of the preferred drugs and come in the next week and first off be angry that the physician didn't know that, but then ask to be switched. So we may see a big upswing in visits in the first month or two as people actually ask their physicians to help change the medications.
Yeah. And we're clinically concerned about that. I mean, some medications can be used interchangeably, but some medications cannot and quite frankly need to be monitored. So we may see an upswing in physician visits and lab tests also when people get switched around.
Well, a lot of medications people are taking are to offset the side effects of the medications they're on. So if you start switching things around, that throws that balance off as well.
Right. Well, it can also be really confusing. I mean, depending on the literacy level of the person that's involved, you know, how do you know what the pills are and all of a sudden you start switching them?
Well, I hope we've cleared up at least a few things today. Thank you very much. Kevin Shulman, Director of the Health Sector Management Program at Duke University. Gina Upchurch is the Executive Director of Senior Pharmacist. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for listening. And give us an email if you want it, sot@wunc.org. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.